right, Derek Young on the show with us at the Young Rivals on Twitter. You know him from K-State Online fame. Good place to be these days. You would have been clued into the details on Skylar Thompson's injury sooner than everybody else if you were there right now. And that's where we start, D.Y. How much of a panic should we be in regarding K-State's quarterback situation right now? You feeling any better about this than you were on Saturday?
Yeah, I think we all should, right? Because I think at the time, I think it almost seemed like a foregone conclusion that Skylar Thompson was going to miss the season. I was going to be shocked if he didn't miss the season, so I was shocked. And to think that it could be just 2 or 3 weeks, like, that seemed survivable. And at the time, it seemed very dreary. It didn't even look like they were going to defeat Southern Illinois.
My God, do you sound sexy today or what? You got a new mic there. It sounds so much better. Mitch, why are you giving me a look? That sounds, you're the audiophile over there. You're the one that gets mad at me whenever anything doesn't sound perfect. You should be all over DY's new mic.
I mean, if he could turn up his volume, his mic volume a little bit, that would be great.
Oh, come on. Come on. What do you want to ask of the poor guy? He got a new mic to come on today.
Well, I mean, you're out here calling him sexy. It was just a couple weeks ago you guys were talking about players' butts. I mean, I don't need to inflate DY's ego here, you know, about
That was a great conversation.
We got plenty of compliments. DY got plenty of compliments about that segment, by the way.
I did.
Are we going to talk about butts more often now then?
DY, who had the best butt on Saturday?
The best butt on Saturday. I mean, That's tough. Jacardi Wright had a good game. How about him? He's a large dude.
Yeah, you see that? All right, Jacardi gets it. You know,
of the week.
The football team has the prize fighter of the week and the student athlete of the week with a nice graphic. We need to just make up a nice graphic that just says the DY butt of the week, and then just lob in a picture there every single week, and it can get out on social media and turn into a thing.
Jacardi Wright was my first, instinct, but maybe Felix Onadike, that was a pretty strong game.
Yeah, man, boy, I tell you what, that kid can play. All right, I'll get my focus back here to the quarterbacks. before we move on to like life without Skylar here for a couple of weeks, however long it is going to be, what do you expect that time period to be right now? How long should everybody be preparing themselves for life without Skylar?
I will share what I have heard and what I've been told, and it's from an overwhelming amount of sources, but I would also say there's a part of me that believes this to sound like an ambitious timeline, and you might feel the same. I've heard 1 to 2 weeks by a few people, and I've heard 2 to 3 weeks by a few people. And then the boldest claim I've heard is that the goal was to try and be back for Skylar Thompson to be back by the Oklahoma game. I mean, that would be great. That's only 3 games away from now. It means he only misses the Nevada and Oklahoma State contests. Would I be surprised if he's back for Oklahoma? Not really, just because of the amount of people that are kind of sharing that type of information. But there's still a part of me that really sounds ambitious.
I would agree. And the thing with the Iowa State game is that after the Oklahoma game, you have a bye week before Iowa State. So you have some extra cushion there. So like me just trying to temper my own personal expectations there, that's kind of what I have targeted in my mind. Just because of maybe that's just a natural pessimism or whatever, but it just feels very cool. I mean, we saw him down on the ground getting his knee worked on with his hands above his head and Chris Kleiman crying next to him. Like that's a hard image to get out of your head, regardless of what anybody tells you on what a potential timeline might be.
Yeah, and that's why we all thought at that point, the worst thoughts coming to our mind. And we were all surprised when the first information started like trickling in that this wasn't going to be a season-ending injury. And probably the first glimpses of maybe this isn't as bad was, I don't know if it was Kellis Robinette from the Wichita Eagle and Kansas City Star. I think he's the one that tweeted out that video of Skylar actually walking into the tunnel under his own power.
Yeah.
So that was probably the beginning of, maybe there's a light at the end of the tunnel here. I keep hearing that Oklahoma game is the goal, but like you said, it almost feels like a more realistic option would be Iowa State, which is 2 weeks after, because as you mentioned, there is a bye week in between those two contests. And obviously, if he's ready to go, he's ready to go, and you play him. I get that. But there's a part of me saying, you know, that's Oklahoma. In many ways, the Iowa State game is probably more critical to K-State.
Yes, but man, I did the same thing last year with like, let's not even play the Oklahoma game. Just COVID your way out of it. And then, you know, I mean, they won. And they the year before, I did the same thing the year before, too, because I said, hey, the KU game's up next. It was the miles to go. Who is K-State? All that. Like, let's just make sure that you beat Kansas, not get anybody beat up against Oklahoma. And they beat them. So, you know, I don't know. Oklahoma looked plenty vulnerable against Tulane. I get it, though, what you're saying. And I guess my question to you would be, like, how much do you expect the injury to limit him even when he does come back?
Yeah, that's your guess is as good as mine there. Obviously, it's a lower leg injury. So if he's not 100%, you would think that his mobility is at least going to be affected somewhat. To what extent? That's hard to gauge.
That's the tough part about it is, like, that's such a huge part of his game, and we've seen it on display this year. It's the smarts combined with the athleticism and sort of just a craftiness with the way that he uses that athleticism to run the ball that is a huge, huge strength to his game. Now, having said all of that, even a Skylar Thompson that can't run the ball at all, that can just stand back there and throw it, would be better than most of what you had from Howard for a while on Saturday, just because Skylar also is generally pretty good at taking care of the ball. Two interceptions this year so far, notwithstanding. But generally, throughout his career, he's been pretty good at taking care of the ball.
You're right. But I was going to point out, while we say that, he threw a pick in both of his games this year. So
He did. Completely understand that. But I think most of us would agree, like, especially coming out of the game, you would have said, like, man, yeah, I would have taken Skylar just standing back there, handing the ball off and throwing it. Like, where should the panic meter be? If I adjust the question to where should the panic meter be on Will Howard, how do you answer that?
It's pretty high. I think we're all, like, I think we were all a little bit baffled by his performance, right? Because we were expecting a much better Will Howard based on everything that we had been told, whether that be in media settings throughout the offseason or from sources. I know both you and I even heard from, you know, people not on the record that really would not have been, you know, associated with any kind of, you know, PR campaign to boost his confidence. So it would be genuine that Will Howard was a much better quarterback, the most improved player on the team. That didn't just come from people on the record. It came from people off the record that wouldn't, you know, have been trying to, you know, just been saying things to say it, like you would maybe, you know, accuse a coach of doing in some cases just to boost a guy's confidence. So it was all genuine. So to hear that for, you know, what, 7-8 months, and then to see the performance that we did get, it was baffling. So, like, in terms of, you know, what the panic meter is on Will Howard, it's got to be a little bit high because he was and nothing against the kid on a personal level. He seems to be a great guy, but he was very poor at protecting the ball and at ball security last season, especially, you know, he was better at it. It felt like the first game or two that he started, and then they got, you know, progressively worse. And that just continued into last Saturday. And it was baffling. And it has to make you very concerned, you know, about what's ahead. I mean, the players, you know, that we did meet with on Tuesday all said the right things. And it seemed genuine, but of course they, you know, they're not going to throw their guy under the bus anyway. But they, you know, I think they're intrigued about seeing Will Howard with, you know, a full week of starter reps and hoping that the Will Howard they saw all off season and practice translate to the game on Saturday.
Well, so here's my theory on that. I think a part of what made the performance more baffling, too, is that he came in. Look, he finishes off the one drive, which was not very difficult. But then the second full drive he has, it's a 10-play, 56-yard touchdown drive where everything looked crisp. It looked good. Made a nice throw or two. Everything seemed fine. And it's look, I think one thing that he said that is clear, the ball is coming off of his hand. I mean, he's throwing a better ball. Yep. It's got more zip on it. It's not as much of a duck as it was last year. Like, I can see running the ball, I thought even he looked better. I can see the improvement that's there. To me, it's just confidence. It just seems like confidence. And the second that something went wrong, the confidence just spiraled in a negative way. And so, to me, that is one way I can actually plausibly see how the coaches would be like, look, he is really improved, because in practice it would be easier to maintain your confidence the whole time, as opposed to when you're out there for the first time with a full crowd, right? And you can hear some of the groans from the crowd starting as things are unraveling in that second quarter. I would guess that that stuff really did affect him, and it is mostly about confidence. That's where I'm landing right now on the Will Howard thing.
I agree with you. I think it's probably more mental than physical, because physically it looked better. You're right. I mean, we're chatting in a thread between, you know, us and a few other guys during the game. And in that first drive, you know, when he finished off Skyler's drive for a touchdown and then get a touchdown the following drive, I mean, we said some very, very positive things, and they were very deserving. He looked different. He maneuvered in the pocket like a prototypical pocket passer quarterback, the way he was sliding to right. I mean, he did some things in the pocket that we actually don't see from Skyler Thompson. So, you know, there was a lot to be optimistic about. The ball was coming out of his hands, not only with more velocity, but it was a tighter ball too, which makes it more catchable for the wide receivers. But as you said, one thing went wrong, and it just snowballed one thing on top of another. And it was just, I guess it was almost painful to watch, because you can almost feel him melting inside his own body. So I do think it's more of a confidence issue, more of a mental issue. Because it is clear that the physical strides and just the strides in general that they had talked about all offseason, they were there, but they were just suppressed so much because he was almost panicking inside his own body.
Well, the good news on that front to me would be, I think you have a coach that is at least more well-equipped than some to deal with those sorts of things. And we've seen that in how Klieman has talked about it this week, deflecting some of the blame to the offensive line, to the receivers, whether that's actually correct or it's just spin. That's how he's chosen to handle it. I mean, you saw how much he cared about Skyler, where he's crying next to him as he's down on the field. So you have a coach that's very willing to play the role of kind of psychologist here with his players and really try to build them up. Ultimately, I don't know what that means when you get out there on the field in the game, but I don't know. I'm maybe grasping at straws here, but that feels like something to me, something at least.
Yeah, he's certainly a coach that is more cognizant of the headspace of his players, particularly his quarterback. So you would hope maybe that'll be a little bit more conducive throughout the week in terms of preparation, hopefully getting those reps under his belt and building that chemistry back up between some of the, you know, targets that he probably hasn't had reps with in a while will be beneficial and productive as well. But at the end of the day, it's going to be about probably limiting something that's going to adversely affect him. And unfortunately, you know, you wish you weren't having these conversations or having these obstacles and roadblocks. And it'll be interesting to have those conversations once we're beyond this season, whether, you know, some of those things maybe prevent him from being able to be relied upon to be the ultimate starting quarterback next year and beyond. So but that's a whole different conversation. But I would imagine part of the game plan, at least early, and I'm sure Nevada will be expecting it too, is that they're going to try to do everything in their power to develop a script, you know, first drive, two drives, maybe three, maybe the first quarter, that allows him to settle in comfortably and to just start to be the Will Howard that they saw throughout the last 7 or 8 months.
Well, Jaron Lewis is there lurking. We'll ask Derek about Jaron, because, look, to be honest, I mean, I have not seen him very much. I don't feel like I have any kind of real grasp on what he is as a quarterback, so we'll get the scoop from DY on that coming up next. We're back with the new and improved Derek Young, who's got a way better mic these days. Sounded awesome. Sounded sexy, even if Mitch doesn't believe it. And he joins us from K-State Online. You can follow him on Twitter at DYoungRivals. Just reading a little bit of KSO. The 3-2-1 from today there during the break. Okay, so Jaron Lewis, Chris Klieman said, I'll play the clip again. I know I've played it a couple of times here now on the show, but if you are just joining us and you haven't heard it before, this is how close the gap is supposedly between Will Howard and Jaron Lewis for who would be the starting quarterback.
I don't think it's tremendously big at all. Experience, game snaps is the biggest gap. And with us going good on good as much as we do during the week, and Jaron will take a lot of those reps just because we need to see him take a lot of those reps, maybe he can shrink that gap even.
All right, so where are you at on Jaron Lewis and what you think of his ability as a quarterback, DY?
I mean, it's hard to really know since he's been at Kansas State, because have we seen him take one snap in a real football game yet? Maybe
nope.
A couple?
I don't think we have. I think there's been literally zero.
Yeah, it might be. I don't know if he's – he certainly can't remember if he's attempted a pass. So I'm not sure that he has. We've heard some quips from whether it be a coach or I think Skylar Thompson himself as well saying, you know, Jaren Lewis probably is the best arm talent of anyone in the quarterback room, which didn't surprise me. I know it surprised a lot of people. But when you – if you got to know him as a prospect or watch his senior high school film, which was a complete difference than his freshman, sophomore, and junior, he took a big leap from his junior year in high school to his senior year in high school. If you watch that, it's kind of a guy that can really sling the ball. You can also see why he might be a little bit of a reckless gunslinger at times, because there's some balls that he attempted to throw that are in his senior highlight film. If you go watch that, kind of make you open your eyes and say, not sure that really translates to any other level of football. But the arm strength was really apparent. He can really fit it into tight windows, judging by his senior high school film. And hearing, you know, Skylar Thompson, Colin Klein, Chris Kleiman say, you know, he might have the best arm talent of anyone in the room. It kind of coincides with what we saw from him as a senior in high school. So I think that part is intriguing, but I think turnover prone would probably be the fear with him as well, just because I think, and maybe it would be a good thing in ways, I think he's a little bit more fearless in terms of how he lets it rip.
So, yeah, I guess to play devil's advocate here, my response to that would be, okay, so we're hearing he's got the best arm talent. We're here. I think we believe that he's pretty athletic, at least, you know, on a reasonably similar level to what Howard is, and that the drawback would be that he's turnover prone. But we just saw Will Howard, you know, make four turnover worthy plays in the span of like 2.5 quarters in the game on Saturday. So what is making up that gap right now, I guess, is the question here. And I think I speak for a lot of people in saying that. I know you don't necessarily have that answer, but I think that's like the impasse that we're all at on that. Like, okay, well, I mean, if he really is that, shouldn't we be seeing him play?
I would say that you're probably not seeing that in practice. There probably is a gap between the two in practice, but we don't get to see practice. So, but if Will Howard isn't going to translate what he does in practice to the field, then that question will start to be asked. I think there's whispers of that already, of course. And that's why I think, I mean, they're never going to come out and say it. And nobody wants to, because you don't want to break the will or the confidence, you know, before you have to. But I would say, you know, if that performance that we saw in those 2.5 quarters kind of persists, then I have to imagine there would be a bit of a, you know, I guess, willingness or, you know, eagerness to try and see what Jaren Lewis does. Because let's remember, there was a point in last season, I know it's hard to remember, and it was a COVID year and it was a weird one and not everyone really remembers it, and it got real ugly towards the end of the year, obviously giving up 45 to Iowa State and 69 to Texas. But if I remember correctly, and I don't know exactly what game, I think Will was pulled for Nick Ost, and then I think Chris Kleiman wouldn't necessarily, you know, go out and with conviction say Will Howard was going to start the next game. But he did, and he played the whole game.
Iowa State, I think, right? Wasn't that Iowa State?
Yeah, it may have been. They got shut out. But I'm just saying, we've kind of been here before.
Yeah. Yes, we have. And he's never gonna talk down on Will publicly, certainly. But I think at some point, this may not make a lot of sense, but the leash to me has to be short but not tiny. Like, you have to give him some breathing room, obviously, but I also don't think this should be something where it's not a situation like I kind of look at what's going on at Texas. Like, I was shocked that the leash was that short on Hudson Card as the starter. I would think
that was ridiculous.
Yeah, like he's probably the guy that over the course of the next 4 years gives you the best chance and the highest upside to have a 10-win season. So I would just roll with him through some of the difficulties right now. I don't think we know that that's the case here necessarily with Will. It doesn't at least feel to me the same. And you're also looking at, hey, this is like a 2 or 3 game window as opposed to what can Will be throughout the entirety of the season. You might approach it a little bit differently from there. I think right now, like, you need to try and survive in advance as much as you can and just get competent quarterback play wherever it is. I'm not saying it has to be great, but just something that's fairly competent.
You have to bridge that gap to Skylar Thompson. Now, if we had an entire full slate of games. Like, we knew Will Howard was going to have to play 9 or 10 games. Like you said, I think there, then the, I think the, you know, the calculus is probably a little different. Then you allow him to work through some of the problems just because you know that there probably isn't a light at the end of the tunnel, but there is in this case, right? Skylar Thompson could be back in 2, 3, 4 weeks, whatever it may be. So there is a sense of, you know, I guess I'm saying there is a sense where he can, he's going to return. So Will Howard in tight frame and window has to really perform, because you go to Jaren Lewis, you got to find any way you can do to win those two games and get to Skylar Thompson.
Derek Young talking with me from K-State Online. How much of a difference does it make? You know, Kleiman said, hey, Jaren could close the gap this week in practice. How much of a difference does it make for him, being that now he can actually take number two reps as opposed to number three, where you may be on the, they're doing the double rep thing. You may be on the other half of the field. You're not getting to use Malik Knowles and Deuce Vaughn and those type of playmakers. Like, that's another thing I wonder about. Like, has Jaren just not had quite as much of a chance because early on he lost out to Will, and now he's been having to take number three reps in practice?
Yeah, you don't get a lot of reps as the number three guy. You don't get a ton as the number two guy. So, I mean, is that going to be enough to bridge a gap? Maybe it could. He at least could. What Jaren Lewis is probably doing this week is earning the right to have the option of being thrown out there and seeing what he can do if Will Howard doesn't answer the bell, I think.
That makes sense, and I think that's a fair way to characterize it. To close off the quarterback discussion here, look, I'm sure that your mentions were just as filled as mine were with Jake Roubley on Saturday, mm-hmm. People wondering about him. Here's what Chris Kleiman had to say yesterday about where Roubley is at.
Jake's doing a nice job. He sustained a little bit of soft tissue injury before Stanford, so he's been down for a little while. He's finally coming back to practice full-time with us on a scout team standpoint, but really pleased with what I've seen throughout fall camp of a young man that has a chance to be a really good player here. He's probably not ready to play just because he lost a number of snaps at the end of fall camp, is right before we play in Stanford, but I'm pleased with his progress right now.
All right, so I'll rephrase the question once again for a third time here. Where's the panic meter on Jake Roubley? Because I think a lot of people are having a hard time accepting that. Like, whoa, he may not even be the third quarterback right now after coming in with all the acclaim and the four stars.
I'm not panicked about it. It's I know that he comes with all the stuff and the stars, but that's great, before they get to college, but that doesn't do anything for them once they get to college. I think there's also, a layer here of his recruiting profile was probably exaggerated a little bit by services. I don't know I would have went as over the top on his ranking as many did. So I think there's a level of that to it as well. And I'm not saying this proves my theory on that, but I think that could play into it. And at the same time, if he did lose a good chunk of fall camp reps, then it also makes sense. And I just think that, at the end of the day, it doesn't mean that he can't be a good quarterback even next year, because look, Will Howard really struggled last year as a true freshman, right? And obviously he struggled again last week, but he went from looking kind of like a fish out of water for many games last season to becoming the most improved player on the team. So obviously, that can still be in the cards for Jake Roubley.
Yeah, and by the way, 100% agree with you. I set up the question that way basically to play devil's advocate and just ask the question that a lot of people are asking, mm-hmm. right? I don't think the thing that I would tack on to that is he didn't even really get a senior year of high school, which that's more reps, like live game reps, and that's a hard thing to replicate. So he's coming in with an injury early in his K-State career and didn't get hardly any senior season that included moving from Colorado to Iowa. Also, the amplification of the expectations here, because being a four-star quarterback means something different here than it would at, even like an Oklahoma State, right? It wouldn't be nearly as big of a deal because they're more used to that kind of thing. K-State is not. So I think all of those things play into it. He absolutely can still be a phenomenal player here. I wouldn't panic much about it at all.
I agree.
All right, so on the defense gets really overshadowed by everything that's happening right now with the quarterback situation. I want to ask D.Y., is Felix Anadike a future NFL player? Because we're seeing him really come to life on K-State's defensive line. You'll get that answer next. A very humble Felix Anadike told us on Tuesday that he felt he could have played much better. What do you have? Are you about to tack on the other part of his name? Is that is that why you look at me every single time I say his freaking name?
Well, this is for everybody. Felix Anidike wants to be called by his full name now, which I totally forgot to do for the SIU game. It's Felix Anidike Uzama.
Okay, Felix Anidike Uzama. He was really humble and came in and basically was like, yeah, it was cool. I got newcomer of the week, but like, man, I don't know. I could have played way better. I just, he had the right attitude about it, the attitude you'd like to hear. And Derek Young, who I welcome back in here on the game from K-State Online, he looks like a stud. He has absolutely backed up all of the offseason praise that was heaped upon him. So my question to you is, like, are we looking at a potential NFL draftee here? Like, I think the thought was you didn't have a Wyatt Hubert. I don't know, man. Is Anidike Uzama going to be that kind of a guy?
He's a little different of a player, and I know you weren't saying they were identical players, of course, but I think he is definitely like an NFL draft prospect down the line. He's got, you know, the size and the measurables that will fit into that profile when he gets to, you know, be of, I guess, the right age to be an NFL pro prospect. But he's going to have those. He's going to be what? I don't know what he is now. He's probably going to weigh 260, 270. He's got long arms. He's got enough burst. And those are only going to get better, right? And it seems like he's going to have the production and the tape to go with it, at least the early signs would indicate. So it's almost not really a debate for me. I think, you know, he's probably one of the more locks or as close to a lock on this team as there probably is.
Well, on defense, man, I mean, they won the game on Saturday. Deuce played a large role in that, too. He had to shoulder most of the load offensively after the initial surge there to get to 21-3. But if not for the defense, they're not coming out of there alive. Anidike Uzama, a big part of that. But, man, I mean, they seem to me to back up the second half, justified and backed up a lot of what we saw week one against Stanford. And I know things change wildly in college football from week to week, but Stanford put 42 on USC after they were almost shut out by K-State. I come out of week two feeling much better about the defense than I even did after week one.
Yeah, Stanford has their quarterback. They probably messed around with it a little bit too much in week one, which was to the benefit of Kansas State. And I think it also backs up that Kansas State's defense is, you know, at least not going to be as dreadful or the flaw in the team that we once thought it would be, right? We were really worried about the middle of the defense, and not that it's really completely ironed out, but just having the presence of Daniel Green essentially makes that an above average unit, if not better. The defensive line has controlled the line of scrimmage in both contests, and one was against a lighter team up front, and the other one was against probably the biggest team that they'll play up front. So they've seen a little bit of both of the extremes on that front. The secondary is probably underperformed just a hair, but we'll see. They're really going to be tested this week, of course. But they haven't been, you know, glaring weakness. So the defense has been great. You said that they won the game against Southern Illinois. They totally did. You can make an argument that they won the game against Stanford as well.
So when you talk about the secondary, though, I am curious about that because you made a comment when we were just talking off the air, like texting back and forth about Echo Boydo. Like, it doesn't seem like the ball gets thrown his way very much right now, but where are you at as far as the performance of he and Brents and just everybody in the secondary? Because it is interesting to me that you think that they've underperformed. And I have not watched them from like an actual evaluation standpoint like you have.
Yeah, I mean, Echo really doesn't get challenged a whole lot in man coverage. I totally get that, and that's exactly true. But he does get targeted a little bit when he's in zone coverage, and he doesn't get the appropriate amount of depth. And that's where you saw Stanford do it a few times, sometimes unsuccessfully. As you know, they really had a disconnect between their quarterbacks and their targets in the downfield passing game. But those zones between a corner or safety, he's not always getting the right amount of depth. So when the ball just fits into right in the middle of those two, sometimes it's not always because the safety isn't closing well enough. Sometimes the corner is not getting enough depth. And I think that's kind of been the case at times with Echo Boydo. Julius Brents has probably been their best cover corner so far this season. And I know some people will shake their hand and are like, what are you talking about? He's the guy giving up catches. That's true, but he's actually had the best coverage. The guys are, He's given up tough catches, contested catches, but his coverage is great. He's got to finish a little bit. Some of that's going to be some of that's luck too, right? Guys that, you know, have worse coverage aren't getting, you know, don't give up the same amount of catches because, you know, the ball just doesn't find them sometimes, or, you know, the quarterback makes a bad throw or the receiver just doesn't run a really good route. But with Julius Brents, I think, you know, he's doing everything that they could want him to do at this point, it feels like. Maybe be a little bit better in run support at times. But in coverage-wise, he's there. He's got to finish the play, get his hands on the ball, find the ball. I mean, finding the ball was a real chore for him against Stanford, and he almost, like, panicked at the end of the play because he's there. He's in the position he needs to be in.
The other thing about the defense is the play of Daniel Green. I mean, one of the most remarkable stats this year so far is that there have been 0 points scored when Daniel Green's actually on the field. Stanford, he missed the end of the game when they finally got their garbage time touchdown, and then he missed the first half against Southern Illinois because of the targeting penalty. Is it fair to say he's a stud, or is that going too far? Where do you see his play so far this year?
No, he's a stud. No doubt about it. You know, if it wasn't, there's a couple guys close to him this year in performance on that side of the ball. Rusty East has played really well. TJ Smith has played really, really well. Felix Onadike had a great game too, and a solid game one. Nate Matlack, not a ton of snaps, but a pretty good game too. And Khalid Duke, a little inconsistent and spotty in game one, but Khalid Duke was quietly very, very, maybe not quietly, but was very, very good in week two as well. But if you wanted to say, you know, who's the best player, you know, right now, I mean, Daniel Green has to be number one. I mean, if there's a better linebacker right now through two games in the Big 12, I'd probably cast a doubt on it because I don't know if you can play better than what he is right now.
Well, I like hearing that because, I mean, it seemed to my naked eye like he sure is pretty good and flying around. What are the biggest differences in what he's doing from what he was last year when it seemed like, you know, fairly average?
Playing fast. I haven't seen him play this. I think we all knew that he probably was this fast or, you know, with that size, but we just hadn't seen it. Maybe he was just thinking too much or just kind of finding his way. And sometimes that happens. Sometimes it takes guys 2 or 3 years to really fully understand and get comfortable with the exact job that they are doing on the exact every single play. That's hard to do. You don't get not everyone's got the players like Alabama or LSU have that they can just trot out there and they're dynamite from game one, their true freshman year at 18 years old. It's some guys that's not going to happen until they're 20, 21. Yeah, Daniel Green's probably 21. It feels like he's been here forever. He had a gap year too. So I think it's just clicking for him and he's able to play faster.
Well, whatever it is, I'll take it because it's working and the defense has been really impressive. They'll be tested by Nevada in a potential number one overall pick in Carson Strong on Saturday. We'll ask DY how worried we should be about the defense going up against that Nevada offense next. Derek Young with us from K-State Online. Follow him on Twitter at DYoungRivals. Go subscribe to KSO. You would have had Skylar Thompson updates before anybody else if you had. Nevada is coming up. Carson Strong is a good quarterback. Might be the number one overall pick in the draft. CBS has him mocked there right now. But I will take a quote from Jalen Pickle, who seemed very emblematic of what most of K-State's defense's attitude was. Respect, but we can handle it. And Jalen Pickle ended it by saying, hey, everybody puts their pants on the same way. When talking about Carson Strong, which I very much enjoyed and I liked. Is your attitude in the same vein as far as how the defense can handle a guy like Carson Strong on Saturday?
Probably not. The guy's really a number one overall pick. He's a stud, right?
Yeah, but he does probably put his pants on the same way that Jalen Pickle does. I mean, just to be fair.
Yeah, Jalen Pickle might have bigger legs.
Well, okay, yeah, so maybe it is a little different. All right.
I would just say that he could give them problems. There's definitely the potential for that. Although, has he seen a defense like Kansas State yet this year? You know, I don't know. I guess I don't know enough about Cal, but Justin Wilcox, coach, has got a pretty good reputation on that side of the ball. And they held Nevada to 22 points. Can Kansas State do something similar? That's probably what it's going to take, right? Because I think if Nevada gets to 30, it's probably game over.
Would agree. You're not going to, in all likelihood, win a shootout with anybody, really, at this point in time. They're going to have to lean heavily on the defense, lean heavily on Deuce. You know, and that's another point here on the offense. You know, Chris Kleiman said at one point this week, it's going to take everybody. It's going to take receiver stepping up. Can Deuce step up? Can our offensive line step up? Can the defense step up? Is there enough left in the tank offensively outside of the quarterback position if they need to lean extremely heavily on that? Which, I mean, look, they gave Deuce 26 carries last week. He proved he could shoulder the load, but I don't know that you want to be trying to do that every single week if you don't have to.
You probably don't, but we kind of both had this sentiment in our earlier segment, right? For these next two games, you do whatever you
whatever
can.
Whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes to get to the return of Skyler with as good of a record as you can. Like, this is the survival mode of the season already. You would hope it wouldn't happen in week three, but here we are, and that's what it's going to be. I think at the end of the day, if we're talking just offense, if it takes giving Deuce the ball 26 times from the backfield, that's what you do. To be honest, I don't know if that's particularly going to be all that effective. I would think it's probably you get more bang for your buck if it's 15 to 20 and also throw it to him a bit and give him in space and in the right situations. I think at the end of the day, I'd like to see the offensive line just take a game over as well.
How would you rate what the offensive line has been? Where are they at right now?
Uneven, right? I think the left side looks like one of the best left sides in the country, probably. And PFF would certainly say so, between Josh Revis and Cooper Beebe, two of the best offensive linemen in the country, according to them. And I think the performance on the field has been reflective of that. And the rest is a little uneven, that they'll have good quarter here and there or good half here and there. We've only played eight quarters, and four halves, but I think they need to be more consistent. Like, for example, Ben Adler, not great against Stanford, but I thought he was solid against Southern Illinois.
And what about Noah Johnson?
I think he makes everyone around him better, but I think he can be better individually. But I do think the value and why they speak so highly of him is because when he's on the field, everyone else is so much better when he's just because he's there too.
Yeah, they clearly love his leadership abilities. And part of the reason I ask is I was hoping you would have an answer like that, like, hey, he's actually, but because the problem is when you have the one play where everybody notices that you get blown up, like, that's how everybody who's not focusing in on it every single play, like, forms a narrative there, right? So,
yeah,
anyway. All right, DY, we're out of time. Thank you for coming on once again this week, and we'll talk to you soon, man.
Absolutely. Take care.